Hey everybody, Keaton Kyle from the Young Guides podcast here. Before we dive into these governor conversations, we just wanted to share a quick message with you. The rights and the content of this episode belong to the Young Guides podcast LLC and to whom we choose to share these rights with. We recorded the series of podcasts to hear what Washington State governor candidates had to say about hunting, fishing, small business, and other outdoor related topics. We do not affiliate ourselves with any of these candidates or any political party. We reached out to a variety of candidates for fair representation. We recorded with candidates that agreed to be our guests on our show. Some candidates declined our offer or did not respond.
We asked each candidate the same questions. Questions were created by the both of us, as well as other guides, small business owners, and people that work within the outdoor industry and have ties to Washington State. We hope you enjoy the conversations that we had with the candidates that chose to record with us and go through our gauntlet of questions. We understand the value of voting, and in no way are we, as the Young Guides Podcast LLC, telling you who to vote for. We hope you enjoy these podcasts. Keaton and Kyle, the Young Guides. Now, let's get into the episode.
Ready?
Yep.
Trust your guide.
Trust your guide.
Fish on.
Let me go, baby. Let's go.
Woohoo!
Oh, baby! Boat-tastic!
No! Oh, geez. That is so cool!
Dude, that's a big one!
Oh, yeah. Nice, Jed!
Snort was so intimidating. There can't be another animal in North America that can make a sound remotely like that.
No.
Doesn't get better than that.
But first, a word for our partners.
Alaska Rodco, Alaskan handmade rods.
National Wild Turkey Federation, South Sound Strutters, your conservation organization for Washington State turkey populations and habitats. Shell Art Studio, original Alaskan focused art.
Slay Jays, it ain't all about the catching.
Welcome back to another episode of the Young Guides podcast. I'm Keaton.
And I'm Kyle. And on today's episode, we have on Alona Kearney. This is part of our series where we're interviewing candidates for Washington State Governor. Alona has allowed us to interview her today and talk about her campaign. And again, it's going to be a lot of the same, or it is going to be the same questions that we have been asking the other candidates that we've interviewed previously. That way we can be fair. And again, it's all touching on outdoor related topics for the state of Washington, small business, things that affect both Keaton and I, our coworkers, and our friends in the industry. So with that, welcome to the podcast, Alona.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
So just to start out, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, my name is Alona Kearney. And my tagline is, I'm not running, we are running for governor, because I'm running a collaborative, community-driven campaign. And a little bit about me is that I'm a military intelligence veteran. I am the wife of a union worker, a small business owner. And, I'm very multifaceted in a lot of things. So that's why I'm a small business owner, because I dibble and dabble in a lot of things. But my business right now is forgiveness coaching, because I believe in building bridges and uniting people. And my campaign slogan is removing labels. And that's very important, that whatever I do in government will be to collaborate with everybody. And everyone includes the people who are marginalized voices in those categories. So if we're talking about what we're talking about today, whether it's about fishing, who are the marginalized voices in that category that are not being brought to the table? So that way we collaborate and hear all sides and find the best solutions.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. And thank you for your service as well.
Thank you.
And what part of Washington are you from?
I'm over here in King County. I'm in Renton. Well, Renton area. I'm in SeaTac by the airport, actually.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So do you have any experience hunting or fishing or any kind of outdoor recreation in the state of Washington?
I personally don't have any experience, but my kids, they They did when I homeschooled them. So they were due with this group called bass fishing, and they love going fishing. They would have bass fishing contests for them and take them out on the waters. And my son, he would always tell me about the different types of fish, how to take apart a motorboat. And I'm like, as being the su supporting parent, like it's just going over my head, but I'm just here to support and love my kids. So,
Yeah,
yes.
that's super cool.
that's a cool group too, especially for people trying to get into fishing that may, not have the time or the opportunities to get out as much as the instructors. I'm sh Is there instructors, right, that were teaching them?
Yes, there's an instructor, and like the instructor, he kind of like took my kids under his wing because he knew my son had a natural love for it. My daughter loved just hanging out with her brother, so he took them all out. And her brother got upset one year because she won two categories with an easy cast. It was with the most fish and the other one with the largest one.
Wow.
And she won the autograph fishing poles, and we still have them here, out here to this day.
That's awesome.
Super cool.
Yeah.
So let's kind of dive in. We're going to dive in on some wildlife questions. This is kind of our wildlife series here. What is your position on Washington citizens being able to participate in hunting and fishing?
My position is, I believe that because I know we have wildlife and hunting in different areas. It's always about making sure it's safe for everyone, including the animals, that everyone's doing proper safety measures. Because I know that there are some types where there's the catch and release, and I think my son says you have to cradle it, Mom, and some people throw them back, and that's dangerous. So making sure people have that training and that they're just not out there harming the wildlife, because we want to protect them as well. And bringing, like I say, all people to the table. So I know that we have a lot of indigenous lands out here that we're fishing on. So making sure that they're at the table with the people who want to have those things done, and collaborating with making sure we're taking safety measures all around.
Yeah, that's great. So talking about Wildlife Commission, right now for the state of Washington, there are members on the Wildlife Commission that are not involved in fishing, hunting, and outdoor activities, yet they're making regulation and season and harvest limit decisions for Department of Fish and Wildlife. What will you do as governor to ensure that we have the right people in these positions for the proper decision making in the future?
Now, see, that's where we're having that issue all across the board, where everyone, including myself, because I'm not a career politician, as to why I'm stepping up to this, is we have a lot of people in different positions who do not represent the people. We need people who are advocates in these areas, which is why I say it's important to have the people who it affects, the indigenous community, have all of them at the table. So whoever is on this board, why are you on this board if this is not a passion or something that you know about or care about? I don't think that it's a good thing to have someone who knows nothing about the situation there, because then they make assumptions and then they spread misinformation to other people. So I think something like that would be more of making sure we're appointing the right people from the communities that are affected by this that can make the best decisions.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. How would you find these members? So you became governor. How would you find these members and make sure that they're the right fit for not only our Wildlife Commission, but maybe for other boards as well?
I would find them pretty much, like I said, I want to make sure that we're bringing the different communities together. So it's going to be someone from within those communities. They can vote sometimes. Hey, put the vote back in the people's hand that is affected by this, that knows about this. And like you have different boards. What is it? The Indigenous community. I grew up saying Native American, so I'm just learning how to say Indigenous now, But the Indigenous community of making sure that they are there also in saying, helping pick choose from the community of people who they can talk to and bridge the gap. So it's making sure somebody from that community that's being appointed that we all agree on,
Yeah, that's a good point. Bring everyone together, right?
Yes.
Given that fish and wildlife managers use the best available science to set seasons, what are your feelings on current commissioners ignoring the seasons and the harvest recommendations of WDFW staff? So there's been recommendations to you talked about harvest limits and making sure that we're following the rules, and that there's going to be times that you're going to need to maybe harvest something or it's a give and take on predator and prey, right?
Yeah.
How will you make sure that we are using the right science-based management that is given to these commissioners instead of maybe ignoring, like we have seen with some of the recent activities?
Well, definitely, again, if it's coming from like what they're ignoring, if what they're ignoring is science that is good science and is coming from something, a credible source, and that credible source is agreed on everybody that's at that table, then that's what should be utilized and accepted, not ignoring what's, what people, because this country was built off we the people, and we have to get back to that and remembering that that's it's a collaborative thing and not you only as a dictatorship.
Yeah, that's great. That's good. In regards to Second Amendment rights for hunting, outdoor recreation, what will you do to protect these rights? And then how can you ensure that these won't be taken away? Again, in regards to the hunting and outdoor recreation.
Second Amendment rights. Well, I know I am a gun owner, licensed gun owner. So, I never really thought that much into it because I always just trusted the system that they did have laws, rules, and regulations that, like I said, the important thing is making sure the animal is not suffering or in, an inhumane manner. Just those things are mostly pretty much like mostly my concerns and most people's concerns. But outside of that, it goes back to I'm not going to dictate, be the di a dictator. I'm going to be a collaborator and making sure the people who are at the table should be at the table collaborating and agreeing. And then whatever that is, that's what I support and advocate for.
Yeah, I just want to add on to, I it's great that you advocate for the animals, right? Because like we go out, we want to harvest and catch salmon, we want to harvest deer, elk, coyote, moose. And I think just the comment is just that we all strive to do our best to not, if we're going to harvest something, it's going to be quick and painless, right? That's never our intention. Like go out and harvest an animal and watch it suffer, because I mean, no, me personally, I feel like garbage if that ever happened,
Yeah, and my son,
so
like I say,
always
my
like
kids
just
like fishing. So, and when they let me know, and with the trainers that they're making sure those protective measures are taken care of, my heart goes out to animals. I don't eat meat, but like I don't stop my kids from eating meat. I don't, like do those type of things. I always want to make sure that those protective measures and that we're holding keep people accountable. And for the most part, for me, I feel that the majority of people, because you have bad apples, but the majority of people who are in that area do their best to, like you say, take protective measures to make it quick and easy and those things. So, yes, I agree.
And I would say the majority of us, like, we all love animals. Like, we want to see animals across the landscape. I do a cleanup every year, and I think it's important to make sure that we're keeping these resources clean. And no one wants to go out fishing in a garbage dump, right? Or out hunting and find cars and garbage and all that everywhere. So it's important to hunters and anglers that do really care. There is bad apples, like you said, but we all, for the majority of us, really care about how we harvest, how we keep these places, and making sure that it's sustainable for the future, right?
And something I want to tag on to that too, that a lot of people probably don't realize that I do, that I have learned a lot, not just from the fishing community when my kids were doing bass fishing, but also from family members who love fishing. Even though, like I said, you might not see me out there because my heart will break no matter how it's done. But they, the family members of mine that are science majors also, like educate me that they're like with the harvesting, like you said, when the harvesting is done, it's because there's an overflow that we need to be able to regulate and balance things. So, and if you don't, then it throws the ecosystem off. And so I'm just not the one to be out there to balance it. I'm just saying. But keeping everything in all perspective of collaboration and making sure that we just are, all on the same page is all I just, that's my job is to advocate for everyone all around.
We appreciate, that even though, you're not necessarily the one out there who's participating in the hunting and the fishing, that you acknowledge that, that is an important, for science and for conservation of species and the ecosystem. I think that's important that even if a person isn't participating in it, they can understand the importance of it. So appreciate you, being open to that and learning that, because there are people that don't, because just because they don't do it, they don't pay attention to it, or they don't, they think negative of it. But when you're open to that and accepting, it's awesome. Awesome to hear.
Thank you.
So I want to hop back to the Second Amendment question that we had. Again, in regards to the hunting and the outdoor recreation, how would you provide firearm education to inform people about safety?
How would I provide a firearm? I think they're getting with the different groups, like you have the NRA and then their other gun. I only really just know about the NRA, but I do know that there are others, but I know about NRA because I'm a member of it. So, getting working out something with them where they can sponsor different things of educational and awareness in the communities, as well as offering them at the different, like you might live, I live over here in King County, and I might want to drive all the way to wherever fishing is. I think I know there's one here in Renton as well, but hey, the gun ranges can offer them. So it would just be pretty much, encouraging the awareness itself and, in other ways that you guys may have suggestions too to bring to the table.
Education is important, right? So
Yes.
you don't know, if you don't know something, then how do you know about it, right? How can you make a judgment on it? So
Right.
I'll go for
go
it.
ahead. No, go ahead, Kyle.
I was gonna say, that was kind of our hunting, kind of wildlife focused portion of the questions. We kind of want to move on now and talk about fishing. And the first question is, how will you address the salmon decline in Washington State and work to unite both sportsmen and women, commercial and tribal fisheries to come together on salmon recovery?
Look, everything goes back to collaboration because that's not my area of specialty. So I won't, like interject, this is what I'm going to do and make happen for you if it's something that I really don't, really specialize in or do those things in those areas. So like you said, bringing the tribal community together and those who enjoy the fishing, how do we talk to them? Especially to me, it's always important to have the tribal community there because they know about the lands and they know how to get to encourage more of the growth in the population of salmon. So we'll ha sit down and have those communities. We'll create those spaces.
Yeah, awesome. So how might you acknowledge the many multiple issues that salmon face? I mean, you can't pinpoint one thing for the decline, right? There's so many issues. So how might you acknowledge that, and then how might you approach those challenges that we're facing?
I would acknowledge it. Of course, we always have media that gives a report of what's going on. But first, I would take the report from the community itself. Like I said, whoever's have collaborating at the table from the tribal community and the community that utilizes their fishing, I would always have them to be the ones to advise me. Someone who has no clue about what's going on advising me will not be advising me. So it's just making have an understanding about that.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Absolutely.
That's like two idiots trying to tell each other what to
So,
do.
here's a follow-up question. How might you pick an advisor to make the right choices, right? I mean, are you gonna use people to tell you, hey, this is a good choice? Are you gonna be part of a board? What's your approach on that? How would you pick an advisor?
Well, it goes back to who I'm appointing. If that will have been chosen to have that seat at that appointed table that the community and the tribal community have gotten together, say we agree this is the best person for representation for all of us. So that person is going to come, as well as I'm going to make time to come here and there to drop. I might, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be very busy when I first get in there trying to get things back on board, but that's part of my rollout plan of to go and also sit in and listen to make sure what's being brought to me was the voice of people, not somebody trying to tag on their own ideas and reword it and manipulate it.
Awesome. Oh, that's great. What are your thoughts on the dam? So, looking at Columbia River, Snake River, and then a multitude of other dams in the state. What are your thoughts on them? And then even the ones that have extended their lifespan or have made them more salmon friendly. And if they haven't made them more salmon friendly, would you be willing to update those dams to make them more easily passable?
Yeah. If they're not salmon friendly, of course, that's important. Like I said, I want to always make sure that they're protected and function the ecosystem is functioning the way it's supposed to. So that is a definite. The Snake River dams and those, I've been, like trying to get an understanding of what specifically is going on because I remember it being a topic of discussion with Patty Murray and Tiffany Smalley during that debate, but I never really got a clear answer or understanding. So I try to follow it here and there. I haven't had time to really follow it, but I know that now this, I'm gonna tell you what my understanding is. Part of it has to do with electricity, right? Am I correct?
Hydroelectric.
Okay.
And
So if they shut it down, that then King County won't have electricity, right? Because that's what I'm getting as an understanding.
yeah, I also believe
And
it's to do with some farming as well. Like the barges being able to push up into the deeper parts of Eastern Washington, just to add on.
okay.
Well,
And
yeah.
so I was confused as are they, is there a group that's wanting it shut down and the other group is not wanting it shut down, and which group is wanting it to shut down and why?
Yeah, it's, but yeah, so there's a lot of issues surrounding it. You have people that want it for the electricity from the hydroelectric that the dams create. You have people that are wanting to have the barges go further up the Columbia. Obviously you have irrigation, right? A lot of time, a lot of those dams are put in so that people could farm the Columbia Basin, because without the dams, they wouldn't have really any water. But then you have people that are trying to promote the wild salmon and steelhead species. And by taking out those dams, you would allow them to have easier passage downriver. One of the major obstacle to the fish is not only getting up and down the fish ladders or accidentally going through the turbines that are creating that electricity and getting chopped up. You also create a whole new ecosystem where the water is a lot slower moving. So it allows that water temperature to rise and you have a lot less dissolved oxygen, and those salmon and steelhead and trout species have a harder time surviving in that kind of habitat, whereas your spiny rays, so your largemouth and smallmouth bass, your perch, your walleye, they can thrive more in that ecosystem. So not only are you having fish that are suffocating because of the lack of oxygen, but you also now have more predatory fish that can key in on those weakened species, or like the salmon and steelhead as the babies head downriver. They're only a couple inches long, and now you have predatory bass that are eating those, whereas you didn't have that predator population before you had the dam. So there's a bunch of different pieces in there, that's a bunch of different groups that want either dams for a certain reason, or they don't want dams for a certain reason.
Well, that's sad, but I think it's important for me to, at because I know that Patty Murray said that she was sitting on that board that was trying to make decisions about that, and I would like to see what the issue is, and if there is another way of funneling money, funneling the water. Now, the thing that comes to my head is just a simple thing, which is have this strainer system to where they can't, be pulled into something while it funnels another way, and it still gives them that safe passage. If it costs more money, then provide the money. If that's the situation, if that's possible. But I would need to get with people who are good at experts of coming, because we're advancing it to technology. So somebody should have a solution for this. And if the solution is the issue to the solution is money, then we need to make sure that that is taken care of. I don't have like a solid answer until I know everything that all the possible routes and options that we have.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier. What is your position on providing WDFW the tools to help control terrestrials and aquatic predator populations that negatively impact fish and wildlife populations in Washington State?
You said, what is my position? My
Yeah.
position is, pretty much we need to provide tools.
Yeah.
I'm about protecting the environment, but also making sure that we have sustainable living as well, that way we can live in perfect harmony. I know nothing's ever perfect, but working together. So whatever tools need to be provided, then we should be providing those tools and working together collaboratively at the table. So one of the things is if the issue is, because I don't know what the excuse they have given in the past, if they say, oh, we don't have enough in the budget, because I know a lot of things will probably go push to other things that they feel is more important, like this horrible transportation system. Some of those things I'm going to be going through the budget and having a team go through and say, hey, this is misappropriated. This is not even being used, and this is just being given to all of their friends. So that way, we could find the funding to be able to push it to other areas that is being overlooked.
Awesome. Thank you.
What can we do to provide more law enforcement for the outdoor sports regulations, your hunting, your fishing regulations in the state of Washington?
What can we do to provide it? Well, I know one thing I want to say. I'm with it because I've been talking about the safety and accountability. Now, I know there's an appointed area with the law enforcement under the governor. So pretty much we need, because we've lost a lot of law enforcement, period, here in this state. So we're going to have to be providing some incentives to encourage hiring people. On, I am so country right now. My words feel like they're backwards at the moment. But hiring more people to be able to be in these positions.
Yeah. Awesome. How can we keep public land public and prevent further loss to public land? What would you do to prevent that?
So, what is happening that we're losing public land?
Yeah. I think there's a give and take of I understand that, like Washington State will own land, but and they'll sell it off and to bring in income to the state. But we as anglers and hunters will go out. Like for one example, there was one plot of land that I used to go up and I went deer hunting, and I took my friend right out as he got out of the Marine Corps. As I came back the next year to go hunt it again after we harvested a deer. Then I came back the next year to go do it again, and it was all sold off. It said private. And so it's just these little chunks, and I think Kyle can speak on it, is we have these public lands, and then as 1, 3, 5 years, 10 years, you come back and it's no longer public, it's privatized, and sometimes not privatized for the interest of people getting outdoors and protecting our natural resource.
Well, what's disheartening about that is because I do feel you on that, and even not even knowing that part of it, but just in period for me, when I see places build, more, we're building further and further. We should sustain as much of our natural. Look, first off, that is the attraction, tourist attraction that we have here, first off. We get rid of that, then we're losing funding. Secondly, we keep pushing the wildlife further and further to where they have no sanctuary. And even if we create sanctuaries, will the sanctuary even be large enough for them? And they weren't created to be in sanctuaries. They were created to be free and living free. So I don't think that that is a good idea to continue to sell off land. And I've seen that in other areas, like even with the port, they took that from being one thing to now the government has taken over that, and now we have port issues. So when the government is doing too much overreach, look at all the issues we have. I feel like this is from too much government overreach. So that I would have to write. First, I would go about it by, like I say, when I bring people to the table, at that as way I would bring people to the table is bringing the wildlife communities together, along with the attorney general, to sit there and come up with a good bill proposal, and then they present it to legislation, because that would be the first step of going through that route of them writing something better to protect those lands and from us further losing our nature. Because if we they keep on talking about going green and climate control, but you guys are causing the problem. Leave the nature alone, because then after a while we're not going to be able to breathe. I feel like y'all going to start selling us air here in a second. Just sell me the good batch.
That's great. So we've gone over the hunting stuff, the fishing stuff. Now we kind of want to dive into the small business Like Keaton, like I said earlier, Keaton and I, we're both fly fishing guys. We either currently own or have owned our own business. We own the podcast together as an LLC. We have a lot of friends in the outdoor community. So the whole small business is really important to us.
Yes.
First question related to that is, how much do you listen to small businesses and how will you work to strengthen their voice in Washington State?
How much I listen to small businesses? A lot. I'm a small business owner myself.
Yeah.
I feel that small businesses is really the backbones of our communities. And, you know, just like if I think about, I grew up in this city and the country. So I'm from the country of Florida, but I was raised in the city of Philly. And no matter where I was, like in the city, we had the corner store, and the corner store man knew everybody and looked out for the kids. So, you know, granted, there might be crime around in life, you still felt safe and you know who the, like Mr. Rogers, you knew who the people were in your neighborhood. Yeah. But now we're starting to push small businesses out, and families don't have something that's trusted or that's relatable to them when they go into the store. It's just big corporations, and what we need, the small business, that's like the ecosystem itself. And so listening to small businesses is very important because we need to bring our small businesses back. That brings back our community. I talked to the people in the International District, and they said that they never knew what was passed, you know, like 2 minutes past their homes. And they liked that because they knew the man at the hardware store, and they could call and say, hey, my window's broken. He'll have something ready later that evening. And they had that relationship built in the community. But now that those are gone, nobody, we don't have community trust in a safe space, because safe space and feeling safe in our communities go beyond the crime that's happening, is still with those small businesses. So it's very important.
Awesome. So I sat down, I had a conversation with a local small business owner, and she tended to talk about, you know, the wages of her employees going up. They've been around for like 20 plus years. They build wall tents and for outdoor use. And she just said that over the years, things just keep getting more and more expensive, and it's getting harder and harder to run a business in Washington State. So she wanted to know, what are the benefits for a small business to remain in Washington State going forward?
Well, some things that I will be implementing, and I have on my social media and my YouTube, it's probably easier to find on YouTube, which is my unboxing policies. And some things that I have in place for small businesses is to give them incentives. So probably, I don't know if this would affect her area, but in the areas where there's crime and a lot of those things going on, provide incentives for them to be able to, that we have tax cuts, tax breaks. A couple of presidents have done that in the past, of giving businesses tax cuts and breaks to be able to help them to catch up with everything that's going on. Also partner with the big corporations to partner with small businesses with their products or whatever it is that's being provided, to where they can be able to compete in the, you know, in the business world as well. So make them feel like, well, you know, instead of feeling like, oh, I can just crush them and own it, make them feel like, hey, if you collaborate, then there's still something in it for you to not try to crush our small businesses. But even if that's creating a hub or offering discount or free things to small businesses, but help us out. Don't crush us. Other things is also providing incentives for training. Like if you want to be competitive online, giving incentives and grants towards that, to where they can get those programs to help them out to be able to. We're always talking about equity, you know, so really making it equitable against the big corporations.
Yeah, that's great. Absolutely. Great to hear, you know, as a business owner, you know, those are things that we definitely need and would appreciate. So, yeah. What is your understanding of the economic impact that hunting and fishing provide across the state, especially for those small businesses in the more rural parts of the state?
My understanding about the hunting and fishing is that we do, that is a, what do you say, a source of our funding or state funding. But because tourists come in, they come in here for our nature. They go out here, like over here on the marina and down at Pike's Place. They come for the fish. They want to eat specifically where the fish is fresh. And we're actually known for that. So I know that it is a big part of our economy.
How will you support local businesses and address the crime and drug problem that is running rampant in most cities in our state? And then I just wanted to touch the crime being physical and digital, right? I mean, we see physical crime, break-ins, stealing, you know, all that stuff. But also, we have a friend down who's in a smaller town in Southwest Washington who owns a shop. And what was happening was he was getting people to place orders on a credit card. They were getting the, he was sending the materials out, and then they were calling it up as fraud. And then he was losing out. So it was a loss for him, and then a win for the credit card and a win for, you know,
the person taking, yeah,
receiving. So in our mind, that's theft, right?
Yes.
How will you approach physical and digital theft?
So for physical theft, that's also one of my policies on that same unboxing video, which is also giving out incentives and or grants to small businesses to be able to get a security system. So let's say if I gave, there's a plaza with small businesses and they all want to pitch their grant in together to get security that drives around. That's what they can utilize that for. Or they want to get cameras. Those type of things will be grants given out to small businesses to help in that area. As far as digital, Inslee has this thing that I'm trying to see where it goes and what all of it entails. He just initiated a digital AI team that I guess they're trying to create policies around to combat some of these things. So it's really getting in there and understanding ways with our computer. Computer, is it bad to say computer geeks? Because that's how I talk.
Oh, that's good. My mind, I mean.
But, you know, our computer techs, computer geeks, and get with them on how can we combat these issues, because I myself have been, you know, a victim of, you know, like different fraud and things like that. So I know how it feels. You feel violated. And and as an entrepreneur who's seeking the American dream that we should all be entitled to, that you're taking it from people who are struggling is the worst.
Yeah.
Another part I want to touch on this. We have some friends that also run businesses in, say, like downtown Seattle. And, you know, there's a crime, there's a drug problem going on there that, you know, that just knowing that that's there can tend to push people away from going to some of those businesses and in certain locations. How will you support local businesses in trying to get more people to come to their doors?
Okay. So with the drug problem, I'm going to actually go back to a little bit with including the homeless issue and loitering and those type of things as well, which kind of drives away business. So my goal is I'm going to open up surplus lands, because number one, to me, that's an issue that we're constantly putting more funding into the homeless budget but the budget, the situation is growing. So common sense to me say that we're actually paying for the situation to grow rather than addressing the situation. I see that they put millions of dollars just to relocate camp, let them sit there for, I think it's 2 weeks or something, and then they pay a couple of more millions to move them over here. That's a waste of money.
Yeah.
We could have had millions, those millions over times over with helping certain situations. So open up the surplus lands, put them there, address the different categories. You have people who are not on drugs, who have income, that live in their cars, can't afford housing. Take some of the millions that you're just throwing away, help them get into affordable housing. Then the next section of people who are on drugs that want to get off of drugs, help them off while you're trying to have people in those, you know, have nonprofits come and manage those communities. So we're not just going to put them over there and let them tear up stuff and do what they want. Have nonprofits come and manage those communities to make sure that we're addressing the issues that are in that area, because you have homeless people who just want to stay homeless. Ain't nothing we can do about that, but at least we know where they are. They're contained. If you come out of this space, now there is going to be some consequences because we've given you a safe space to be at, to not harass or bother other people. So, but we'll always still, like I say, address different people. I have this whole other policy written out of, it's called Hope Washington. So that's also addressing with the youth who are committing these crimes of theft, that they feel like, oh, I want money, money, money now. And my family is poor, so it don't look like we're gonna do any better. So I might as well steal. So I'll tell you right now, my husband, he served in prison 24 years. And he'll tell you, you need these programs so that way we can have preventive maintenance. You don't want to get rid of police because then there's no accountability. You need the police to have there to have accountability, but also create programs, bring in the ex-felons who are doing their best and being an example like him of what second chance look like, and tell the kids, you don't want to go down this road. Here's a program. Let's work together with the police, ex-felons, and get these youth off the street so that way they don't end up becoming strung out on drugs and all of these other things. So my whole Hope Washington really encapsulates all of these different wraparound services, because it's not about a one size fits all. And that's what they're always trying to do, make it one size fits all and putting us all in the same bucket and then calling us crabs in the bucket because you're making us fight over resources. So.
Yeah, that's great. That's really cool to hear.
Thank you.
So we're going to kind of move into some general questions now, just about maybe some character and just about you a little bit more. So to start off, what does leadership mean to you?
Leadership means to me someone who is actually somebody, a bridge builder, someone who looks at leadership to me is like they say the chef in the kitchen. He knows all the ingredients and what to put in with what. And I'll tell people, I'm not here to policy away anyone's beliefs, but I'm here to find ways that we can come and have a seat at the table and have the discussion of things that need to be, you know, include people. When I go to Eastern Washington and tell me that LNI has made passed laws about their farming, that they don't know anything, just like you were talking about earlier with the fishing, that LNI has made this whole decision about hours and cutting back things that they have not come to educate themselves. So it's making sure that we're bringing awareness, we're not putting out misinformation to people. So that's a leader's job, is to create the balance in the whole office space and in this state, in this way, the whole state, and not in a divisive manner that our governor, current governor, has been doing.
Awesome.
What are you most insecure about when you become governor? So I guess, AKA, what do you feel like are your weaknesses? This is a question that was asked from a friend of ours. He's a firefighter. That was something that was important to him, is what are you most secure about as governor?
secure and insecure? Or just
Insecure.
insecure?
Insecure, yeah,
Okay.
sorry.
What I'm most insecure about, I never really think about that because all my life, my mom just says that I'm a pit bull. So I think in my head, I think my, let's say my strength would be also my insecurity, which is
Yeah.
I don't never know when to give up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if I put my mind to it, if I told you that I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And everybody could be sitting here on the board and say, Governor, it is impossible. It's impossible. And I'm going to tell you, split that. I am out of the pot impossible and make it I'm possible because we're going to make this possible. We're going to find a way to make it work. So that's why I need people also to balance me sometime, which is, oh no, my kids will tell you, my family will tell you, even my exes will say, oh, if she puts her mind to it, she is not giving up until she proved to you that it is possible.
That's awesome. How will you listen to what the majority of Washington residents want, and how will that be portrayed in your legislation?
So, what I want Washingtonians to know that it's a balance of listening to what Washingtonians, the majority wants, but also protecting to make sure that we're not infringing on those who might get outvoted on to make sure that we still have that balance. So whatever you want, as long as it doesn't infringe on somebody's rights, and then if you still want it and there might be an infringement, finding a way to where it does not infringe and we're still protecting the smaller groups or and things, because it's making sure everybody's heard. And sometimes, and a lot of times, it always goes back to the awareness, bringing people to the table, because if they understand why this group, it might be harmful, then they might say, okay, well, let's go back to the drawing board and let's do this. Because before I got into politics, I used to have a nonprofit where I taught youth how the legislative process, and we would bring in politicians and they would debate us. It opened my mind up to a lot of things where I would say, oh yeah, well then why don't we just do this? Because this is harmful and this makes more sense. But then when they brought in other situations, then it became more understandable and clear what things are set before us that we really have to look at.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's something I think the people forget about, is that, you know, it gets presented here by the media, but there's so many different angles that we don't see. We just get to see the big picture, you know?
Yes.
So, okay. So I'm going to ask you probably the last question of this, this podcast, but probably the toughest question of them all. And what is one word that describes you?
Oh, one word that describes me. I guess it is the toughest question. One word that describes me, I would say go-getter.
Like it.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, cool. You, we appreciate you taking the time to go through those questions with us. We want to give you we're going to give you the stage here. Just tell people how to find you, how to support you, and where they can, you know, where they can find you. You talked about YouTube and all that. Just kind of let it all go.
Yes. My website is peoplebeforeparty.com. So that's easy to remember and easy to pass on. And all of my social media handles are at Elona4Gov. And that's four is spelled out F-O-R. And that's on Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Those are the five that I have. And you can find my information also on that peoplebeforeparty.com, my email, phone number. I do talk to people. I do answer. I do get back with you. I'm, you know, not my campaign team. It's me, because I want everyone to know that when I'm governor, that you're not going to be locked out. Because when I say I'm not running for governor, we are running for governor, that means you guys are the ones in the governor's seat. So why would I lock you out? I will be an open ear. And so if you come to me and say, hey, the person that you appointed did not listen to the people, even if you and bring a, even if you have to bring a video recorder, say, he, see, this is what the majority of us said, and they turned around and did this and brought you some bogey stuff. But hopefully everyone, like I say, sits at the table and pick the best person to be representative, so that way we don't have these issues, because we should have government working from bottom up and not top down, because you guys are hiring me to represent we the people.
Awesome. Yeah, great way to wrap it up. Well, we appreciate you hopping on and taking the time, and you know, we wish you the best of luck in the race for governor.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm going to do a little outro, and then we'll end the podcast, and we'll just chat for a second, okay?
Sounds good.
Well, that was another episode of the Young Guides podcast. We want to just give some appreciation to Ilona for hopping on and kind of going through the gauntlet there of our questions. We just really appreciate you taking the time tonight and talking with us. And one more time, I just want to thank you for serving our country. We really appreciate that. That's badass. So, if you are enjoying our governor series here, we just want to hear some feedback from you guys. If you can reach out to us on you can reach out to us on Instagram, you can reach out to us on Facebook. Let us know what you're liking, what you're hearing, and if you're liking what you hear, not only through the governor's podcast, but also what our podcast is providing to you. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That'd mean the world to us. We're not asking for the best review. If you think we can improve in some way, we'll take some improvement. What is it called, Kyle? I'm spacing it.
Constructive criticism.
Construction criticism. Thank you. Oh my gosh. Long day. We'll take some constructive criticism too. So we really appreciate you guys taking the time and listening to our podcast every week and letting us know. I think that's it for right now. Stay tuned for more events coming up, some fly tying events. We got the Cedar River cleanup coming August 10th, that I'll be putting on. So looking forward to that. And, Kyle, anything on your end?
Nope. I think that's it.
All right. Well, with that being said, this was an episode of the Young Guides podcast. We'll catch you on the next one.